Let's see, today we're going to continue our study of Solomon in 1 Kings. And the manual has a very ambitious chapters 5 through 9. We probably won't get through chapters 5 through 9, but again, I don't want to spend, you know, a whole lot of time on this passage, but try to pick out a few things. But before we look there, let's turn back to Ephesians chapter 2, and we're going to read verses 19 through 22. And I think this helps put the temple into the proper perspective for us as Christians as we look at the temple. The temple is an illustration of the church. You know, we've spent a lot of time in past studies on the tabernacle. The tabernacle is a picture of the Lord Jesus Christ, but the temple is a more of a picture of the church. So let's again read these verses in Ephesians chapter 2, 19 through 22. Now therefore, you are no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom the whole building, being joined together, grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are being built together for a habitation of God in the Spirit. So, you know, as we look at the temple here in 1 Kings, it was built as a habitation for the Spirit of God, as the tabernacle was built in the wilderness as a habitation for God also. But now the church, each one of us individually and together, are being built up as that habitation for God. There's not a physical building anymore. It is the church, which is a spiritual building. So anyhow, if you keep those thoughts in mind, I think it helps when looking at this passage. Now, what we'll do is we'll start reading in 1 Kings chapter 5. And actually, I thought chapter 5 I found interesting. It kind of laid out how this task was going to be approached by Solomon, and the outside help he had. And as the teacher's manual says here, we see a joining together of both the Gentile and the Jew to build this temple, and that's what we see in the church is also. It's a joining of the Gentile and the Jew to build God's church. So again, we'll read chapter 5. I found it interesting, and possibly you will too, but just the way it was laid out, how Solomon approached this huge project he had in front of him. Okay, 1 Kings chapter 5, verse 1. Now Hiram, king of Tyre, sent his servants to Solomon because he heard that they had anointed him king in place of his father, for Hiram had always loved David. So this was a close ally. This Hiram was a close ally of David. Verse 2, then Solomon sent to Hiram, saying, you know how my father David could not build a house for the name of the Lord his God because of the wars which were fought against him on every side until the Lord put his foes under the soles of his feet. But now the Lord my God has given me rest on every side, so that there is neither adversary nor evil occurrence. And behold, I propose to build a house for the name of the Lord my God. And the Lord spoke to my father David, saying, your son, whom I shall set on your throne in your place, he shall build the house for my name. Now therefore, command that they cut down cedars for me from Lebanon, and my servants will be your servants, and I will pay you wages for your servants according to whatever you say. For you know there is none among us who has skill to cut lumber like the Sidonians." So Solomon's asking for help here in acquiring these cedars that he wanted to build, wanted to use for the building of the temple. But you'll notice he's not asking for this gratis. He's willing to pay whatever Hiram desires. So they enter into this agreement. Verse 7, "So it was when Hiram heard the words of Solomon that he rejoiced greatly and said, 'Blessed be the Lord this day, for he has given David a wise son over this great people.' Then Hiram sent to Solomon, saying, 'I have considered the message which you sent me, and I will do all you desire concerning the cedar and cypress logs. My servants shall bring them down from Lebanon to the sea. I will float them in rafts by sea to the place you indicate to me, and will have them broken apart there. Then you can take them away, and you shall fulfill my desire by giving food for my household.'" So there's the deal he's struck with Hiram. Hiram is willing to bring as many logs as Solomon wants, and in return, Solomon is going to feed him, provide food for his household. Verse 10, "So Hiram gave Solomon cedar and cypress logs according to all his desire. And Solomon gave him 20,000 cores of wheat as food for his household and 20 cores of pressed oil. Thus Solomon gave to Hiram year by year. So the Lord gave Solomon wisdom and as he had promised him, and there was peace between Hiram and Solomon, and the two of them made a treaty together. Then King Solomon raised up a labor force out of Israel, and the labor force was 30,000 men." So he had to amass a big force here to deal with these logs that were coming in, 30,000 men. And I was impressed just with the way Solomon did this and the wisdom he used in not having the whole 30,000 there all the time. But in effect, he had them in three shifts, as we read, monthly shifts. In verse 14, "And he sent them to Lebanon, 10,000 a month in shifts. They were 1 month in Lebanon and 2 months at home. Adoniram was in charge of the labor force." So he didn't have this constraint, or that's not the right word, but this whole labor force, but he allowed that, you know, they worked for a month in Lebanon, came home for 2 months, so they were able to take care of, you know, things at home, whatever the responsibilities at home. Then verse 15, "Solomon had 70,000 who carried burdens and 80,000 who quarried stones in the mountains." So 70,000 and 80,000 must be somewhere around 150,000. So there's another 150,000 men that are quarrying stones and moving various materials for the temple. So what are we up to? 180,000 already that he has involved in this building of the temple. Whoops, here's some more. "Besides 3,300 from the chiefs of Solomon's deputies, who supervised the people who labored in the work." So we have a large supervisory force there also. "And the king commanded them to quarry large stones, costly stones, and hewn stones to lay the foundations of the temple. So Solomon's builders, Hiram's builders, and the Gebalites quarried them, and they prepared timber and stones to build the temple." So you can see what an undertaking this was. Upwards of 200,000 Israelites are involved in this. He has the cooperation of King Hiram of Tyre, a Gentile, to provide the cedars and the wood for the temple. Now, let me grab my... Now, we aren't going to read a lot about about the actual building of the temple. I have something I'll pass out here in a minute that we'll look at. But just a couple of verses looking at in chapter 6, where it talks about the building of the temple. Let's look at verse 7 in chapter 6. And the temple, when it was being built, was built with stone finished at the quarry, so that no hammer or chisel or any iron tool was heard in the temple while it was being built. This is amazing when you think of it. These stones, they're massive in size. Those of you that have had the privilege to go to Israel and see, what's left of those stones, are just massive in size. And so they had them all chiseled and hammered to the exact specifications, so that when they were shipped to Jerusalem, they would just be put together. There would be no further need for chipping away of the stones. Everything fit perfectly when they arrived in Jerusalem. And I guess the parallel you can think of, the way the church is being formed today, the church is being formed pretty much silently. God is taking each stone as He's building His church. Each stone is being fit in the place that He has designed for it. So again, just kind of an illustration of how the church is being done today, also silently. But that verse just kind of stood out at me. Then, it's interesting, during the middle of this construction, the Lord speaks to Solomon, and we'll see that in verses 11 through 14. Then the word of the Lord came to Solomon, saying, "Concerning this temple which you are building, if you walk in my statutes, execute my judgments, keep all my commandments, and walk in them, then I will perform my word with you, which I spoke to your father David. And I will dwell among the children of Israel, and will not forsake my people Israel." So Solomon built the temple and finished it. It's interesting. The Lord, here's Solomon in the middle of this huge construction project. He's building this house for God. But yet God comes on and reminds him that what he is really looking for from his people is obedience. And we'll read chapter or verse 12 again. "Concerning this temple which you are building, if you walk in my statutes, execute my judgments, keep all my commandments and walk in them, then I will perform my word with you, which I spoke to your father David." So, he didn't tell Solomon, "Well, if you finish this temple, this is what I'm going to do." He's going back. He said, "This temple is," paraphrasing God, if I could be so bold, I think he's reminding Solomon that what he's really looking for from him is obedience, and that will be his mark, not this temple that he leaves. So anyhow, as you read through the rest of this chapter, you'll see the description of the sanctuary. Everything was built with these stones and these cedars, and then everything was covered in pure gold. So it's when you think of how well these stones fit together and everything, when the final temple was completed, you never even saw that detail. Everything would have been covered over with gold. And again, gold is an expression or a symbol of the perfection of God. So we see the entire inside of the temple covered over with gold. Now I'll pass this out, and this is just kind of, sometimes it helps, and maybe
side. Okay. Yeah, there's three. No, they're just three pages, but each person gets just one package. They're stapled together there. Now, what's being passed out, and I'll explain it more when you get it. And again, this is just kind of for your information. If you go out and Google Solomon's Temple or something, you can find many different illustrations of the temple. You young folks are probably wondering why somebody just didn't snap a picture of it on their iPhone as they were walking by, but of course that was 3,000 years ago, and there weren't many iPhones around at the time. So the only thing we really have are kind of artist rendition of what the temple may have looked like. We do have in the scriptures some exacting descriptions, so we know more about the size of everything. We don't see exactly the outside. And as I said, if you Google it, you can find almost as many images as you want. But the front one there is page 1 of 3. Is kind of a cutaway of the temple after it was constructed, and you can kind of see some of the details in the look at the very front there in the Holy of Holies. You can see the cherubim and the Ark of the Covenant. Maybe you can, maybe you can't. It's kind of small, but that was in the Holy of Holies, and then in the main part there, the holy place would be the part to the right there. You can see the lampstands, 10 in there, and then on the outside you can see these these bronze basins. You see the big basin there, the molten sea. You see the brazen altar. And then you see one pillar and the cutaway of the other pillar as you lead into the temple. So that's kind of an artist rendition of what the temple may have looked like from the outside. If you flip over to number two, it gives you a better diagram of what the inside of the temple may have looked like. And as far as dimensions are concerned, the Holy of Holies there on the left, that was 20 cubits long, and the holy place itself was 40 cubits long. So, a ratio there of 2 to 1. Holy of Holies was half as big as the holy place. So that's just kind of a diagram of what the placement of things in the temple itself. Now, the last page is a diagram of the tabernacle. And you'll notice certain similarities. The inside of the tabernacle was set up in the two separate rooms, much as the temple was, the Holy of Holies and the holy place. You see that there's an altar to the right there and a wash bowl. So the setup is at least to me is kind of similar, or it has some similarities between the tabernacle and the temple. Now the size was quite different. Let's see, the enclosure for the tabernacle, if you're looking at page 3 of 3, it was 100 cubits wide, so that line or the inside line there is 100 cubits across the top, and no, I'm sorry, that's the courtyard. The entire courtyard, so that'd be the very top line, would be 100 cubits across. And then down where the gate is coming down the side there, it was 50 cubits. So, you know, as you recall, the tabernacle was something that they would take apart and move with them in the desert. So, of course, it it would be much smaller than the temple. But again, I think it's interesting to just note the similarities between the temple and the tabernacle. Again, as we started out, reminding you that the tabernacle was to be a representation of Christ. The temple was to be a representation of the church. So do what you will with those. I thought that was interesting. If you have a half an hour or something, you can probably go out and find other images. It's interesting how dissimilar some of them are. There was one I saw that had a huge pillar kind of thing at the front of the temple, but you don't see that anywhere in the scriptures. So there's some artist what would you call it? The a license in saying what this looks like. So anyhow. Now the temple itself, let's look at back to we're in chapter 6. We'll look at verses 37 and 38. It reminds us how long it took for the temple to be built. Chapter 6, verse 37. In the fourth year, the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid in the month of Ziv. And in the 11th year, in the month of Bul, which is the eighth month, the house was finished in all its detail and according to all its plans. So he was 7 years in building it. So with this huge force he had, several hundred thousand men, it still took them 7 years to construct this temple. And I guess really when you look at it, it's not not as big as the Empire State Building or anything like that. It's fairly modest in size as construction projects go. But then again, you know, you look at the details in chapter 6, you know, all the carved wood, and then everything was overlaid by gold. Certainly, you can see why even with that many men, it would take a long time to put it together, 7 years. We won't spend much time looking at chapter 7. Chapter 7 is kind of the construction of the other buildings. There were other buildings in the court, so to speak. There was Solomon's palace was there. You can see, and he also built the house of the Forest of Lebanon. He built some other, the Hall of Pillars. There were a number of the hall for Pharaoh's daughter. There were a number of other structures that were built in the area where the temple was. And if you look at some of these diagrams, I couldn't find one that I liked which showed the location of some of these other structures. But basically, the temple was built up on Mount Moriah, so it's kind of up on a little higher plane than the rest of these buildings were built. They were built kind of below that. So as you went from the palace and whatever, you ascended up to the Mount of Moriah where the temple was built. But anyhow, someone who is mentioned in chapter 7 is Huram, H-U-R-A-M. He was the artisan who did a lot of this bronze work, the labor and these other structures out in the courtyard. So again, another individual that was involved in the construction and of the temple. Now, when we get into chapter 8, And maybe we'll look at quickly, we'll make this the last thing. After the temple has been constructed, there's one important piece missing that needs to be brought into the temple itself, and that would be the ark. And we get a description of that movement into the temple beginning in chapter 8. And we'll read the first 11 verses there, which describes that. 1 Kings chapter 8, verse 1. Now Solomon assembled the elders of Israel and all the heads of the tribes, the chief fathers of the children of Israel, to King Solomon in Jerusalem, that they might bring up the ark of the covenant of the Lord from the city of David, which is in Zion. Actually not far away from where the site of the temple. Verse 2, and all the men of Israel assembled to King Solomon at the feast in the month of Ithanam, which is the seventh month. Then all the elders of Israel came, and the priests took up the ark. And they brought up the ark of the Lord, the tabernacle of meeting, and all the holy furnishings that were in the tabernacle. The priests and the Levites brought them up. Also, King Solomon and all the congregation of Israel who were assembled to him were with him before the ark, sacrificing sheep and oxen that could not be counted or numbered for multitude. A large sacrifice. Then the priest brought in the ark of the covenant of the Lord to its place into the inner sanctuary of the temple, to the most holy place under the wings of the cherubim. For the cherubim spread their two wings over the place of the ark, and the cherubim overshadowed the ark and its poles. And the poles extended so that the ends of the poles should be seen from the holy place in front of the inner sanctuary, but they could not be seen from outside. So they are there to this day. Verse 8 is just kind of a curious interlude. It's hard to understand what describing about those poles. But anyhow, verse 9, there was nothing in the ark except the two tablets of stone which Moses put there at Horeb. And it's interesting, Aaron's bud that was originally put in there and the bowl of manna aren't mentioned, but by the time the ark gets moved into the temple, they're no longer there. And then continuing in verse 9, when the Lord made a covenant with the children of Israel when they came out of the land of Egypt. And it came to pass when the priests came out of the holy place that the cloud filled the house of the Lord. So the priest could not continue because of the cloud, for the glory of the Lord filled the house of the Lord. So we see there a clear indication, I believe, that the Lord was pleased with what had been constructed, and we see indication that he has filled the temple with his glory. Now, a lot of chapter 8 is also dedicated to the prayer of dedication that Solomon made for the temple, but given our time today, maybe we'll stop here, and I'll try to pick that up the next time we look at Solomon. So that'll be it for today. Thank you.